Shabbos Daf Nun Ches. The Gemara left off talking about an istima, which is the scarf that a woman would wear to hold back strands of stray hair. So we have a braisa that says there are three things about an istima. There's no prohibition of shatnez. There's no issue of shatnez with it. It cannot become tame from saras, and women can go out with it, cannot go out with it to a rishus harabim, a public domain. Rabbi Shimon said that brides can wear an istima crown at their wedding because there was used to be that women would wear a type of crown to their wedding, but after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, the Rabbanan decreed that women should not wear this crown because they wanted to have some form of mourning and show that everyone's really sad about the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. They wanted to limit the joy that was being shown. So the Mishnah had talked about a kavul, and the Gemara was trying to understand what that is. We had noted that there were two different ways of explaining what a kavul is, whether it's a woolen cap or an emblem that a slave would wear to show its status. Rabbi Abahu had said that it is a woolen cap, and now Shmuel is going to say that no, a kavul in our Mishnah is talking about the slave's kavla, the emblem that they would wear to show their status. However, the Gemara notes a contradiction, because Shmuel says that a slave can go out with an emblem which is tied around their neck, but not with one that's on their clothes. But we see from here that according to Shmuel, a slave can go out with their emblem. So the Gemara answers that Shmuel allows the slave to go out with the emblem when it's an emblem made by the master, because then the slave won't remove it, because clearly the master wants the slave to always be wearing it, and out of fear he's not going to wear it. However, Shmuel doesn't allow the slave to go out with the emblem when it's one that's made by him, by the slave himself, because clearly the master doesn't care so much if the slave is wearing it, and he might come to take it off and thus carry it on Shabbos. But if that's true, then why does Shmuel make a differentiation that you are not, that the slave cannot wear an emblem that's on its clothes? And that's for a different reason, that if the emblem falls off from his clothes, the slave is going to take his cloak and fold it over his shoulder and cover up the place where the emblem should be so that the master shouldn't see that's missing. And Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef says that one who goes out with a cloak folded over his shoulder is chayav to bring a karban chatas. We see that's not allowed on Shabbos, and Shmuel himself said to Rabbi Chanina Bar Shila, showing that he holds of this idea, that all of the rabbis that are part of the Reish Galusa's house are not allowed to go out with their emblems on Shabbos. However, the reason for that is because maybe it's going to fall off, and then they're going to drape a cloak over their shoulders to cover up the missing emblem, except for you, Rabbi Chanina Bar Shila, because the Reish Galusa knows you're very loyal to him, whether or not you're wearing an emblem, so it's okay for you to wear an emblem on Shabbos because you're not going to drape the cloak over your shoulders. Shmuel said that a slave can go out with an emblem tied around his neck, but not when it's on his clothing. And we have a braisa which says the same thing, that the slave can go out with the emblem tied around his neck, but not on his clothing. However, we have a conflicting braisa which says that a slave cannot go out with an emblem, whether it's around his neck or on his clothing. However, in both cases, they're not going to be susceptible to becoming tamei. A slave cannot go out with a bell around his neck, but he can go out with a bell attached to his clothing. Both of these bells can become tamei. An animal cannot go out with an emblem tied around its neck, or with an emblem on its clothing, or with a bell on its clothing, or tied onto its neck. However, in all these cases of the animal, the bells and the emblems will not be susceptible to tumah. So are we going to say that the first braisa, which allows the slave to wear the emblem, is talking about an emblem made by the master, because we know the slave won't take it off, and the second braisa, which forbids it, is talking about an emblem that was made by himself, and that's why he's not allowed to wear it? But the Gemara says we don't even need to say that. We could say that both braisas are talking about an emblem that's made by the master, and the second braisa, which forbids wearing the emblem, is talking about an emblem made of metal, and the first one is talking about an emblem made of clay, because of a teaching of Rabba Bar Avua, that an item that a master is going to be particular about, if it gets lost, the slave cannot go out with it, because if it becomes detached, then the slave is going to carry it back out of fear of the master. However, the slave can go out with something that the master does not really care about because he's not going to feel pressure to carry it back home. And that's why, regarding the metal emblem, the slave can't go out with it lest it become detached and the master is going to care about that. But the clay one, the master is not going to care so much about. And that's why when the braisa says that the emblems cannot become tamei, this implies that normally the material that the emblem is made out of can become tamei, but when it's fashioned as an emblem, it cannot become tamei. That's why the braisa has to teach us that. So this makes a lot more sense if we're talking about metal, because metal utensils can become tamei. But regarding the clay utensils, it doesn't make sense that we're talking about a clay utensil, because a braisa says that stoneware, dungware, and clay utensils cannot become tamei by Torah or by Derabanan. So it doesn't make sense that it would even have to teach us if we were talking about a clay emblem that it can't become tamei, because that's obvious. So therefore, we could say that we're talking about a metal emblem in this case. The braisa had said that a slave cannot wear a bell around his neck, but he can wear a bell on his clothes. So why is a slave not allowed to wear the bell on his neck? Because if it falls off, then he might come to carry it home. However, it can fall off on his clothes too. Why is it okay for the slave to wear the bell on his clothes? Because in this case, the bell is sewn onto the clothes, and Rav Huna Breizer of Yehoshua says that anything which is woven is not included in the gzeira against, you know, going out with these ornaments on Shabbos. And when he says woven, it means like it's sewn on because it's not going to fall off, and we're not worried about it. The braisa said that an animal cannot go out with an emblem on its neck or on its clothes. It can't go out with a bell around its neck or on its clothes. However, in all of these cases, they are not susceptible to tumah. We have a brisa, though, that says that the bell of an animal can become tameh. The bell of a door cannot become tameh. If you had a bell of a door and you're putting it on an animal for its bell, then it can become tameh. A bell of an animal, which is transferred to be a bell of a door, even if you nailed it in, it's going to still be susceptible to tumah, even though it's now the bell of a door. And the reason for these two rulings of when you take the bell of a door to an animal or the bell of an animal to a door is because a utensil can become susceptible to tumah through thought, meaning when you intend to change the bell from the bell of a door to the bell of an animal, now it's susceptible to tumah. However, it can only lose its susceptibility to tumah when you physically change it. So just moving the bell from the animal to the door doesn't make it lose its tumah status. However, from this brisa, we still see that the bell of an animal cannot become tumah, can become tumah, which seems to contradict our original brisa, which said that the bell of an animal cannot become tameh. So the Gemara is going to answer that the bell of an animal can become tameh when it has a clapper in it, the thing that like bangs around the bell, because therefore it has its useful purpose, a useful purpose. However, it cannot become tameh when it's missing a clapper because it has no useful purpose. However, if the bell becomes tameh since it's a utensil and it's just an ornament like jewelry, then even without the clapper, it should still be tameh because it's like jewelry. So even though it's not useful, it should still be tameh. But if it's not a utensil at all, then whether it has a clapper or not, that's not going to be able to make it into utensil. However, the Gemara answers that a clapper is able to transform this bell into a utensil, because Rabbi Yonasan says that a metal utensil which is designed to produce sound can become tameh from the pasuk of kol davar asher yavo ba'esh tavir ba'esh. Anything which goes into fire can be has to be passed through a fire to make it tameh. Sorry, to make it tahor. And the extra word of davar of thing teaches that even an item that produces a sound, which means a utensil when it doesn't produce a sound, may not be able to become tameh. However, once you introduce the ability for this bell to be to produce a sound, it now can become tameh. However, we have a brisa that says that a slave cannot go out with a bell around its neck, but he can go out with a bell on his clothes. In both cases, it's going to be tameh. However, this seems to say that if it's a bell that doesn't have a clapper, why in this case is it tameh, right? We said that the bell can become tameh. However, if we're dealing with a bell which has no clapper, why in this case of the slave can it become tameh? Because we have a brisa that says that a bell for mortar, for a cradle, for a covering of a Torah, or for children, if it has a clapper, it's going to become tameh. If it doesn't have a clapper, it cannot become tameh. If you had a bell which was tameh and you removed the clapper, it's going to stay tameh. But we see from here that it's all dependent on whether or not it has a clapper or not. So why are we saying that even if it doesn't have a clapper, it could still become tameh? So the Gemara answers that this brisa, which is talking about the bell having a clapper or not, is only talking about children's bells, because there you're putting it on the children so it can make a sound. However, if it has no clapper, it's going to be totally useless. However, a bell for an adult is used more as an ornament, as jewelry, so it's going to become tameh even if it doesn't have a clapper, because it's still serving a function. The brisa says that if the clapper is removed, it's going to stay tameh if the bell was tameh. However, why? This is a physical change which we know should remove the tumah, because you're physically changing this bell by removing the clapper. Why doesn't it lose its tumah? Abaye answers, since anyone, even a lay person, is able to fix the bell by easily putting the clapper in, therefore, even though it's temporary, unusable, and has no use, it's going to stay tumah because it's so easy to fix. However, Rava has a problem with this. The Mishnah says that a bell and a clapper are considered attached, which seems to imply that the clapper is an integral part of the bell. If you remove the clapper, then it's going to become an incomplete utensil. It doesn't matter that it's so easy to put back. Since it says the bell and the clapper are attached, if you remove the clapper, it should lose its tameh status, because now it's basically a different utensil. So the Gemara wants to try to say that the Mishnah is actually teaching exactly like Abaye, that when it says the bell and clapper are attached, it's teaching even when they're physically unattached, we still view it as if it's attached because it's so easy to fix, which is exactly like Abaye. However, we have a problem with that, because the brisa says that scissors and the carpenter plate and a carpenter's plane, which have two separate pieces, but you put them together when you want to work with them, they're considered attached for tumah, meaning if one part becomes tumah, the rest of it becomes tumah. However, they're considered unattached for the sprinkling of the paraduma ashes, meaning if it becomes tumah from a dead body, then each individual piece is going to have to be sprinkled, is going to have the paraduma ashes sprinkled on it individually. However, why the difference between tumah and sprinkling? Why is it not always attached, always unattached? Rabba answers that midor raisa, when these things are being worked with, when you're using them, they're considered attached, both for tumah and banned for the sprinkling of the ashes, and when they're not in use, they're considered unattached always for both the sprinkling and the tumah. However, midarabanan, we take the stringencies of each, that we view it as always attached for the tumah, and we view it as always unattached for the sprinkling of the paraduma ashes. So we see from here that utensils are only considered attached when they're in use. Regarding the bell and the clapper, even though it's very easy to reattach them, if they're unattached, we're always going to view them as separate things, right? We only view them together as attached when they are together, when they're not separated. However, once we separate them, they're going to be totally viewed as unattached. So that's why Rava answered that the reason that the bell is going to stay tame even without the clapper is because you can still use this bell for striking against the pot. You can hit it against the pot and it's going to make noise. And so therefore, since the bell can still be used for a semblance of its original purpose, it can still make noise. We're going to view it as still attached and we're going to view it as still useful and it's going to stay tame. Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina says the same thing, that it's going to stay tame because you could still use it to strike against a pot. Shkayach.